I'm Mark Sullinger, producer and one of the hosts of The Moth Podcast. For nearly two decades, The Moth has brought live storytelling to stages around the world and to millions of listeners. These are real people telling true stories from their lives. Stories about a lost family recipe, about working to free a wrongfully convicted man, about realizing you need to leave your May-December romance. Stories that will move you, surprise you, make you laugh. Stories you can't forget. Join us. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Hey, Tara here. Welcome to the Insane Things Podcast, where we wrap up the week that was, only covering things so insane we either haven't seen them before or the world hasn't seen them in recent memory. It's insane that I can do this every week. But those are the times we live in. Let's dive right in with Insane Thing number 6. New numbers out this week show liberal women are not breeding, not reproducing. And the difference between liberal and conservative women is staggering. For every one kid a liberal woman has, conservative women have two. That's right. And this study looked at the ages of 25 to 35. There are several insane and never before seen things about this. Number one, it hasn't always been. There were liberal women in the 1980s, but they still had kids. In fact, the gap between liberal and conservative women was almost non-existent in terms of childbearing in the 1980s. This is among women 25 to 35. Liberal women average 1.29 per woman, conservative women 1.44. So not a lot of difference there. Pretty negligible. Well, in 40 years, as the Democrat Party and really the left has turned into something of a cult, liberals have nearly halved their birth rate. Folks, cut their birth rate in half? Well, the conservative birth rate has surged. So one side's building the future, the other is destroying it. Now, here's where this gets full on nuts, and it's really good news for us. If you had to guess, going back to 1980, which decade would conservative women have the highest rate of childbearing? What decade would you guess? Probably the 80s? Maybe the 90s? You'd be wrong. It's now. Specifically, in 2026, it's now. Conservative women between the ages of 25 and 35 have the highest birth rate that they have had in the entire 50-year history. And the study doesn't go back before that. In fact, the year we hit our highest birth rate in 50 years was 2026. But if you look at the graph, and I'll put it in the sources, it's been going straight up since the 2010s. No interruption. Never mind the economy, never mind COVID, never mind inflation or financial struggles. It doesn't seem to matter. At the same time, for Democrats, it's rolling straight down, pretty much uninterrupted, with liberal women 25 to 35 at the lowest they've been in terms of birth rate in 2026 in 50 years. Put this together and you can see why the Democrats' foremost obsession is importing illegal immigrants. They're simply not having children, folks. And what this shows is liberal women haven't always been like this. This is part of the cult. Think how deep and wide this cult-like behavior goes psychologically. If you're attacking your women out of having children, having families, wow. By the way, while we're on insane stats we've never seen before, this one just came out overnight from Gallup. Gen Z men just hit an insane high of 42% saying religion is either the most important thing in their life or one of the most important things in their life. 42%. What makes that insane is back in 2022 and 2023, Gallup reports, just 28% of Gen Z men said that. So to recap, 2022 to 2023, 28% of Gen Z men were telling Gallup that. It skyrockets in just 3 years to 42%. 28% to 42%? Folks, even on Common Core math, that's a 50% increase. And it hurts my heart. It makes me sad because when you have 52% of Gen Z women identifying as liberal, some of these poor men are going to be left without wives or are going to be left childless when the music stops playing in the musical chairs game, because these women just simply don't want to have kids. And these men increasingly do. Folks, this goes with that study that we had, gosh, it's been a year ago now, that incredible study that showed just one group of people in our society rank having children as their number one goal in life. Conservative men. Even conservative women put that at number two. And you've got these young men leading this surge, too, in returning to church. So we haven't seen our lifetime the two genders so divided in a generation and so part of two such distinct cultures. It's going to be interesting to see what it all adds up to.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Insane thing number five. Remember Donald Trump's impeachment in 2019? Yeah, we learned this week after Tulsi Gabbard declassified all the documents behind it. Totally fake. And I mean, on a shocking level. Here's what happened. Remember that a whistleblower came forward and said that they had, you know, heard Trump's phone call and he'd, you know, broken laws and he was extorting Vladimir Zelensky in a phone call. He's very, you know, alarmed. Okay. Congress and the American people were told for months that he was a firsthand witness to the call. And I even remember at the time, several articles from our side confused as to how this person, I mean, yes, he worked for the CIA, but how did he have access to the Trump call? We never were able to figure it out. Now we know why. He didn't have access to the call. Didn't hear it. Didn't see a printout. In fact, he merely heard a rumor about it. He had no firsthand knowledge. That's kind of important because according to whistleblower law, you've got to have firsthand knowledge of a crime or something like that that is classified in order to come forward. He didn't. But here's where this gets wild. Now, the way you come forward with whistleblower protection, because it's illegal to reveal classified data, according to the law, is you have to go to the inspector general, in the agency you work for. This would be the CIA. And you have to present your case. Okay, here's what I have. And they have to give you the blessing that, hey, this meets the criteria for whistleblower protection. Well, there were several problems because when the inspector general, a very corrupt person who may be on his way to prison after Tulsi Gabbard referred them both to the Department of Justice this week for prosecution, because what they did is perjury, because they did it under oath, both of them. Well, we find out that his own supervisor said, no, he doesn't have knowledge of this. He should not be a whistleblower. He's lying. Even worse, we find out that this supposed whistleblower actually planned the whole thing out with congressional Democrats. And we find out that this individual worked closely with Joe Biden. Oh, and a second person who worked on this with the whistleblower was also one of the authors of the Russia collusion hoax classified documents. So basically, this uses the same plan as the Russia collusion hoax. Write something that's completely fake, a lie about Donald Trump, then classify it and selectively leak parts of it. No one can debunk it because they'd go to prison for releasing classified data. Bottom line, it was all totally fake and very much a plot by the Democrats and the deep state together. Here we go again to hurt Donald Trump electorally by committing crimes, including but not limiting to perjury. Will anything ever come of it? I don't know, but they're already running on impeaching Trump again, should they be elected. So I don't know. What are they going to do? Hire a creative writing major to write the next one? Folks, I got to tell you what, to their credit, they've made impeachment absolutely meaningless at this point. Insane thing number four. And you don't usually see something so insane, it could completely rewrite our political future, but this is it. Former spokesperson for Donald Trump, Sean Spicer, out with this leak this week that the Supreme Court has already decided the Voting Rights Act case. You know, the one that clearly in violation of the Constitution allows special districts to be drawn specifically to elect Black Democrats who otherwise would never be elected. Districts not justified by the census count, which, by the way, the founders were pretty specific. That was the census count, how the congressional districts were supposed to be allocated. Well, Spicer just went on a podcast and said he's got it on very good authority that the Supreme Court has already decided the case and they're eliminating the fake Black Democrat districts. And by the way, what happened here, folks, was a liberal Supreme Court took the second article of that bill, which just said, hey, all voters must be treated exactly the same according to race, and did the opposite, drawing special districts for more equal voters, to quote Animal Farm, Black voters, Black Democrat voters, who otherwise wouldn't justify the districts. So what does that mean, folks? Well, the numbers are already staggering. Take a look at the South, for instance. Right now, Republicans in the southern states hold 65 congressional seats. Democrats hold 24. Right off the top, eliminating the fake Black Democrat seats would give Republicans 77 congressional seats and Democrats 12. For those keeping count, that's a swing of 24 seats. And it's just in the South. Folks, this would be so powerful. Worst case scenario, Democrats lose 19 seats. They shouldn't have. Best case scenario, it comes in around 25 seats lost. What does this show you? Democrats have always been a minority party. Even worse for Democrats, they used census fraud to steal six more seats in 2020 when we didn't realize the guy running the place was a Democrat who violated the Constitution. Instead of just counting people, doing basic addition, and then dividing up congressional seats, decided that he would create a formula to count people that, of course, ended up excluding conservatives and Republicans and overcounting Democrats, resulting in the theft of six seats. Folks, that's why we won in a mini landslide in 2024, but we barely control Congress. That control was stolen from us. Folks, we are one of the most oppressed people on the planet. Our so-called democracy, our political power has been stolen from us by a party that no way, no how should control Congress now or for the next 15 years. I'm talking about the House, obviously. Anyway, the good news here, if Spicer is correct, and he seems pretty confident about it, is that this is going to change everything going forward. The bad news is, Spicer says, that the liberal members of the Supreme Court are slow walking this so that the Democrats can get one more effectively stolen congressional election this fall.
I have been told by reliable sources that that decision is done and that the minority is slow walking the dissent so that states can't and states do not have time to redistrict ahead of it. But I have been told very reliably that the minority is slow walking that dissent.
All right, wait, hold on a second, because I don't think I've read that anywhere. That is news.
As soon as that comes down, Donald Trump is going to try to redo the census. And it should be redone with discrepancies this massive. I mean, we're talking, what, 2 to 3 dozen seats here? Folks, and as I said on a previous Battleground America podcast, it's even worse for them because something else is now going on. Since 2020, these numbers are incredible. I did a Battleground podcast on this last week. 5.4 million people in a little under 6 years have moved from counties that Biden or Harris won to counties that Trump won. 5.4 million. And so there's been a mass movement since the last census. And on top of that, we got the census stats just this last week showing massive out migration of immigrants, both illegal people coming here on visas and then people who are legal overstaying their visas. And I explained this in that podcast because Trump's got the border so tightly locked down, net mass migration and folks, this was in the major metro areas, most of which were blue, net mass migration should be around zero right now. But places like LA, El Paso, New York are seeing negative 75%, negative 95%, negative 65%. What does that mean? The illegals are leaving. Visa overstayers are getting on planes and flying home. And people are just not coming. In other words, Democrats are even hemorrhaging migrants and immigrants. And this is all happening so quickly that, folks, I'm telling you, these numbers are going to be massive. I do not be surprised if when it's all over, 3 to 5 years from now, we see a 40-seat swing. I'm not kidding. It could go that high, assuming something doesn't happen to make people like hate the Republican Party or something. We normals, bottom line, are the uber majority in this country. Sure makes sense why the Democrats and John Thune, but then I repeat myself, won't pass the SAVE Act. It's becoming really clear Democrats can't win without cheating. Anyway, bottom line, what's going to happen here? The second this comes down, Trump's going to want redistricting. He's going to want a new census. The Democrats are going to go to court. They beat us every time at judge shopping, and they will get liberal judges who will try to run the clock out. Trump will appeal. If I had to put my money on it, we probably still have to run with the whole fake electoral system and with the fakely drawn districts by November. It's going to be really hard at this point to get all that through court and get everything redrawn by the election. But stranger things have happened. Good news is, going forward, there's a very large path for us to take this country back, or at least block really bad stuff for like the next 10 to 15 years.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Insane thing number three. In a little over a year in office, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth has achieved a series of military triumphs that we have not really seen, that have not really been equaled since World War II. The bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities, twice. The arrest of Nicolas Maduro. The air campaign against Iran's regime, flawless. So, naturally, the Democrats want to impeach him.
I mean, we have unprecedented leverage in this circumstance. I can't think really of a moment in warfare short of the end of World War II where we demonstrated ultimate power and a regime had to finally relent. And I think the world would be better if we got there. But General Keane is right. This is a brittle time and they literally have no cards left.
Yeah, that's Steve Yates from the Heritage Foundation, and he nails it. Remember last week I was playing General Jack Keane and he didn't sound so confident because it looked like we were capitulating to Iran with that ceasefire? Yeah, Jack Keane sounds much better right now about our negotiating position.
You really cannot overstate the implications of what this blockade means to Iran. We can absolutely cripple the economic viability of this country if this blockade holds. I would expect the Iranians at some point here are going to come forward and surrender much of what we want, and we should get everything.
So, like I said, naturally, given that track record of success, of course, the Democrats want to destroy Pete Hegseth and probably the military top brass, which is why they filed articles of impeachment this week. And they've been really clear, from James Carville to a number of Congress members, why they want to have an impeachment hearing if they win control of the House. And it's so they can get him under oath and on the record in order to collect the evidence they need to send him to The Hague so he can be tried for war crimes, likely along with his top military brass. In other words, turn him over to the Euroweenie traitors who supported Iran all along and China in this war and let them finish him off. They're actually promising to do that. I'm still not over this. So as they explained to us, and I played you the audio last week, the first step is the impeachment. They filed the articles this week. 9 Democrats did, with zero condemnation from their leadership. Oh, and an Iranian Democrat loon congresswoman was the one who filed the articles. But none of that is the insane part. Folks, we've never seen this in a war before, ever in U.S. history. We've had plenty of bitter debates about wars where we've disagreed with each other, called each other horrible things. But we've never given comfort to the enemy before by trying to impeach a successful commander like Pete Hegseth in the middle of a war. I mean, it is as treasonous as it is shocking. But never forget, what do we say about everything in life? Follow the money. Follow the money. Who has been funding the Democrat street protests? As Joe Biden spokesperson John Kirby admitted, Iran. Yeah, they're paying for them. Who has been pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into the Democrat street protests since Trump took office? From the violent protests and clashes in L.A. to more recently in Minneapolis. Yeah, Neville Singham. He's funneling, mainlining, if you will, Chinese dollars right into these street protests. And he can because he's an American-born citizen who has moved to China, pledged allegiance to the Chinese Communist Party, declared himself a communist, and now he's funneling all these this money into the Democrat Party. So you got to understand, I mean, this is hundreds of millions of dollars for the Democrats. They are going to side with China and Iran. They're going to do whatever it takes to keep that money flowing. And if that means threatening to impeach our Secretary of War in the middle of a war in order to help the enemy, so be it. They're Democrats. But that's not even the most insane part of this. You're thinking, Tara, how could there be a more insane part of this? The most insane part of this is the day they filed the articles of impeachment on. That would be the same day we learned to our horror that those troops that were killed by bombings on our bases by Iran. Yeah, well, it was by Iran and China. China used its satellites, or rather allowed Iran to use its satellites to do the targeting. Folks, the IRGC doesn't have the sophistication to use those satellites. This was a Chinese hit. How many of us did they kill? To me, this should have been the story of the week. How many of us did they kill? Seven on our bases, murdered by China and Iran. How many did they injure? That's officially classified, but the number runs between 300 and 500. Some of our service members injured catastrophically. China did this. Iran is merely the weapon, just like the satellite is. And the Democrats file articles of impeachment on the day that comes out, folks. And by the way, China has a history of this. This is not the first time. Lest some of you think, well, that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't attacked Iran. Yes, it would have. Here's how I know. Go back to April of 2025, when Tammy Bruce at the State Department announced that we'd caught China dead to rights, doing the targeting for the Houthis, a proxy army of Iran, in the Red Sea, to strike with missiles our naval craft that was trying to keep the peace there. In other words, they were doing this last year, trying to kill service members in our Navy. So this is not the first time. Folks, we're at war with China. I can't help but think the date of the filing of these impeachment articles was not accidental. That the Democrats, in filing them on the day they did, were trying to draw attention away from that story of the Chinese helping Iran to target and kill and injure our troops. Insane thing number two. Given the shocking level of net out migration from these liberal areas and the fact they may be facing another census count when the Supreme Court decision I mentioned earlier in this podcast comes down, Democrats are desperate. Desperate to keep every last illegal immigrant, no matter how rapey, no matter how pedophilic, no matter how murderous, inside their boundaries, because they know Trump's going to go straight for that census. They will give them anything to keep them at this point. And I mean anything. Exhibit A is Boston this week. Headline, UK Daily Mail. Woke Boston mayor hands out $500 haircut and massage vouchers to illegal immigrants despite city's budget plunging $50 million in the red. Folks, they are literally firing teachers right now in Boston because they don't have enough money to pay them. But they are handing out $50 vouchers to illegal immigrants for what they're calling self-care benefits. Wellness allowances, if you will. And the program is very specific. In fact, they've put flyers out to recruit people. Applicants who they have to be, quote, low income, isolated queer and trans migrants, asylum seekers, and refugees. That they will be prioritized over regular citizens. And they've got to be LGBTQ, or at least claim they are. Applicants can get $250 to $500 toward non-clinical care. Everything from gym memberships, acupuncture, yoga, meditation, and massages. Golly, I'd love a massage. But I don't qualify for a Democrat massage. Folks, you know what this is? This is just desperation to hand them cash. Anything to get them to stay. Because again, they know Trump is going to try to redo that census and to redraw those districts. There may even be a legal route to redrawing those districts pre-election without a new census. That's why you're going to see Democrats do insane things to hold on to these illegals. Like California this week, where Democrat gubernatorial candidate Tom Steyer has pulled into the lead, at least among Democrat candidates. He's currently polling number one among the Democrat pack with this insane plan he published. I'll attach it here, to arrest ICE agents inside California, build a special facility to hold them, and also arrest what Steyer calls the leadership directing them. So members of the Trump administration, past and present, he plans, he says, to extradite them to California for trial at the state level. He calls this new legal principle he plans to do this or base this on supervisory liability. And he says that he will give the state attorney general the authority to hold ICE's leadership accountable for violence and pass the laws through the legislature needed to round them up. Folks, this would be a civil war. It would be a civil war. Round them up, drag them back to California. But that's not even the crazy part. No, he's also talking about using state money to repatriate the illegal immigrants that Donald Trump has deported. So invite them back, put a task force together to go get them in their countries, re-recruit them, and pay to fly them back. His plan would also provide free legal assistance to help them remain here and fight the federal government. Folks, that's not a winning national platform, but of course, Democrat leadership hasn't condemned it. Why? Because they're showing you their plan for the future. But folks, this is also, again, an abject act of desperation, given the numbers that I've laid out in this podcast. As Lee Rogers said on my radio show this week, and he made a great point about this, if that were to actually become a legal thing, if that could be established, or if California just does it anyway, well, then there's nothing stopping us from extraditing, say, Alejandro Mayorkas to Spartanburg for trial, for murder, or whatever we want to charge him with. Because this week, folks, this is the worst illegal immigrant crime I have seen, and many of them are bad. An illegal immigrant in Spartanburg, where I live, the upstate area where I live anyway, told police that he started drinking on Saturday. Sunday at noon, he is driving around in a car, runs over, and kills two kids on their bikes, 9 and 12 years old. They were doing everything right. This is broad daylight at 12:20 on a Sunday. They're on the sidewalk when they're killed. He was so out of control, his car jumped the curb and ran them over, and this is the worst part, in front of one of their mothers, who was with them. I'm kind of shocked that this crime hasn't gone uber national. But again, if Steyer wants to play this game, well, I mean, I guess we could again, extradite Alejandro Mayorkas, Biden officials for trial here in South Carolina and put him in prison. Guess we could do this all day long. But folks, the left is counting on that we won't, that we are law-abiding people who are follow the Constitution and that they will get away with extraditing us for trial. Anyway, what's so insane here is that this is the plan Steyer is running on, and he is currently the number one Democrat in the polling for the governor's race. Insane thing number one was a tough call this week. I mean, Pope Leo defending the Iranian leadership and incorrectly using the Bible to do it after refusing to condemn or even acknowledge the 42,000 executed by Iran. And by the way, I was very disappointed in the Pope this week because for a couple of days, we were learning Iran was planning another execution, this time of women. Of everyone on earth, given the credibility he has right now and the fact that the Iranian regime has praised him this week, if he had called them down, he could have done more than just about anyone to stop the execution of these innocent protesters. Women, no less. But he said nothing. Not before they took the internet down for 8 minutes yesterday to carry out the executions. It went black. And they reportedly killed hundreds. And not when it came back up either. He said nothing. In fact, he doubled down. Not on the Iranian leadership, but on Trump. Actually throwing out the word tyrant. Last time I looked, Trump hasn't executed anyone. But what's so shocking, the gut punch really, is that the Pope clearly is okay with those who do. Here's Trump.
I'm going to execute four more protesters, reportedly, including the first woman protester. What do you tell Iran?
Well, tell that to the Pope. What do you say? Tell that to the Pope.
You want to patch things up?
Yep, normally that'd be insane thing number one. But there's something even crazier, something the media hasn't really fully put together yet. But it's becoming clear that this is about the sixth stage in a brilliantly executed plan to isolate China and confront them. Meaning we're moving into the riskiest phase of this war. And that's because of three things announced over the last 42 hours that we're doing simultaneously that have never been done before. It started with Scott Bessent, our Treasury Secretary, announcing that he knows Chinese banks are hiding the remainder of the Iranian money. Bessent has totally bent the Middle East to his will, and Iran really helped making the fatal mistake, as Bessent said this week, of bombing all of those countries, some of which had been allies. They're all now opening the books and letting them into their banks to freeze Iran's accounts. That means the only ones left are the ones hiding in China. And Bessent said this week, specifically, that he knows of Chinese banks where Iranian money is. He wants the books opened and he wants to freeze them, or we'll put sanctions on China. That was thing number one. That's going to cause a clash. Thing number two was the announcement by General Raising Cane that we're going to put secondary sanctions on any ship caught moving Iran's oil or sanctioned oil. And his announcement yesterday that the blockade of the Iranian ports is going so well, we're going to export it worldwide. In other words, any ship carrying sanctioned contraband, energy, is going to be pulled, captured, and kept by us. That sets us up for a confrontation with China in two very different ways, along two planes. One, a military or naval confrontation, but two, a trade confrontation. Because they've got to back this up. If Bessent says, look, we're putting secondary sanctions on China, those are trade sanctions. That means we can see a trade war. That, in fact, that is the next step here if China doesn't give up the goods on Iran. So we don't just have the gun pointed at Iran. We've got it pointed at China. And folks, in ways that could cause bloodshed, that could cause an actual military conflict if we've got to take one of these ships. I don't know if China's going to dare moving that oil. Here's the other thing, though. Since Trump has put the Russian oil back on the market, all 13 million barrels a day. Still going to take a couple more weeks for that to hit. China has a good option. They can go buy all the oil they want on the open market. They're just going to have to pay about 40% more for it than they've been paying because they've been buying illegally the sanctioned oil and we've never held them accountable. This is us saying we're holding you accountable. Folks, this will decimate Chinese manufacturing because they have been counting on buying that cheap oil, particularly the heavy viscous oil they use for manufacturing, at a discount. That's why we've seen so many of our factories have to move, in part anyway, to India or China, because we cannot compete with the discounted oil that they're allowed to buy, but we are not. By the way, that's according to our own sanctions. That's how stupid we are. Our own manufacturers can't buy discounted oil, but China can because we don't enforce the sanctions and we've let them buy the Iranian oil, the Russian oil, and also the Venezuelan oil. Well, we've just taken the Iranian and Venezuelan oil off the board. Russian oil also would be something that they could be caught with, especially now that we've told Russia, hey, you could sell it on the open market. So bottom line, this sets us up for potential direct conflict with China, number one, and also sets us up for trade conflict. And so what this is disarming China, because China, as you've seen in the beginning part of this podcast, China absolutely was using Iran as a weapon. This wipes Iran out of the way and puts us face to face with China for the first time on a collision course. Or China could just comply and everything will be fine. Next week, folks, could be a stunner, because this is the phase Trump has angled for all these months. conflict with China. Have a great weekend.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.